Welcome to episode 8 of Talking Pathways. Great to be back. This is one of my favourite times in the fortnight when I know that I've got a great guest with me who I know has got some real golden nuggets, some key insights to share about success in life, but also, most importantly today, about how you can grow and scale a business. So I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Murphy, who I will introduce in a moment. Pathways podcast series, of course, Talking Pathways, our fortnightly series where I'm joined by one key guest, somebody that I truly believe is going to be able to add value for you in the 45 minutes soul circle that we have together, that will really give you some golden nuggets, practical insights that will help you to fast track your pathway to success and avoid that horrible pathway of trial and error. And Paul Murphy is no different. So Paul, firstly, a huge welcome to our community of Talking Pathways followers. So thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks for the invite. I'm really pleased to be here.
So Paul, I know you've got so much experience, is it more than we can unpack in 4 to 5 minutes, but just to give the listeners some insight today, I mean, On A Go, with the title for today's session, On A Go, On The Move, The Secrets to Unlocking Growth Potential. So let me just give you a headline. I mean, onago.com grew from a garden shed in the late 2000s to become a multi-platform seller, listing over 6,000 products internationally across 20-plus marketplaces from all major worldwide platforms, including Amazon and eBay. Onago.com dispatches over 5,000 orders globally. It's that figure that really impressed me. 5,000 orders globally each and every day. And I know, Paul, certainly over the last few years, the business is really on the move in terms of its growth. So do you want to share a bit about when you got involved with On A Go and where the business is today and kind of the growth curve you're on in order to give us some context? And then I really want to drill in to start to understand from you what you see as those golden nuggets, those secrets to unlocking growth potential.
Sure. So the story, as you say, is 13 years old. From the garden shed. Morten founded the business back then, and I joined. I've known Morten for about 15 years, and I joined the business as a non-exec about 2.5 years ago, and then as a CEO 2 years ago. So I'm the last 2 years of the story in terms of where the business is at, and in terms of the growth that the business has enjoyed. The trajectory has been that we've been growing kind of 40% year on year. Our business has grown in people terms 100% in the last year. So we've gone from 40 people to nearly 85 in December. Wow. We now sell an item every 15 seconds on a platform. We actively manage 6,000 listings across 21 global marketplaces, and we do through technology updates probably about 250,000 times a day. So that really is kind of our pace, and of course we're very lucky to be in a really wonderful moment of technology growing, consumer change. That pace of change in retail continues to accelerate. So that's kind of where we are and have been over the last 2 years. So that's meant that we'd obviously had to continue to keep up with that pace and actually continue to drive the business both internally and externally. So we're a global business sat here locally in Jersey, but truly on a global platform. So it's a really really fascinating business to be involved with, and the key to all of that is our people and how we manage our team and how we develop our team and our practices around that. And that's really part of our winning formula, one of the very very key ingredients for our winning formula so far.
So you kicked us off there by starting to drill into it. So it's great to get the context in terms of a product sold every 15 seconds. So just in the few minutes you were talking there, you've probably sold about 8 products. Paul, over the last couple of years, what's been the enablers that have helped you to realise growth? So you talked about people there and you've gone from 40 to 85. How do you manage bringing in 45 people into the organisation, getting them to understand the culture? If people are one of the success that makes the magic happen, what's your thinking around the importance and how you bring in so many people so fast?
So our very first step was really trying to look at, you know, what are we really good at and what do we love doing? Because, you know, you've got to define that first for both all of us that were already here and also in our history. And so we did a really, really, really good piece of work around working through our core values and wanting to define them, because, you know, they're a bit like rails for us. So, you know, they allow us to both have an identity and they also allow us to drive positive behavior, you know, and we all sign up to those as a business. So we have four core values in the business: collaboration, meritocracy, Kaizen, and own it. Those are our four kind of cultural values that we play to, and you're a huge advocate of this, Royston. But for us and me, over history, the defining factor of success is teamwork, people, and collaboration. And it's one thing no competitor can take away. You know, if you look at some of the most successful teams, clubs, or industries, or brands, you'll find that actually more often than not, actually, whilst we might talk a lot about brand, when you really see under the hood of those businesses, as Royston and you do a lot, you begin to understand actually the real formula and the real secret sauce is the people, the collaboration, the teamwork. And so that's a real fundamental piece of defining. And in terms of making sure that everybody joins us, we've worked really hard on our processes. So as we grew, our front end, in terms of the way in which we engage with marketplaces, was all about systems and technology and process. And I think most businesses get that really quickly. But I think what sometimes we forget to put on the table is the same is true of our teamwork. You know, we have to find systems, we have to define processes, and we have to enable software, and we have to enable people to understand who we are. And so it's our job, my job, and the SOT and all of our jobs as leaders in the business to help define that and help play to that every day when we turn up. So that, you know, that's one of the key levers in terms of how we scale. And then as we've grown, of course, we've created a framework of success. So we really believe in people. We've been lucky enough to be able to bring in a head of people and performance into the organization, deliberately, by the way, not called HR, because it is about people and it's about performance. We realize there is a functionality to that, but we as a team didn't want it to be called that, because in my mind, it's absolutely about people and performance. So that's how we've begun to grow, and we've been lucky enough on Ireland to be able to recruit some really good talent and invest as we go along.
Paul, you've given us, I've just been feverishly writing down a couple of golden nuggets because I like to extract the sound bites that I think really chime and resonate. So teamwork, people, and collaboration make the magic happen is one that I've captured there. I love the expression, values are like your rails. They keep people on a pathway. And Paul, if any of our listeners were listening who haven't invested time in their organisation in really defining their values, what would you say to them in terms of the importance of doing that? And how early in the business's life cycle should you be setting the values?
I don't think that any time is... any time is right. You know, I would advocate straight away. You know, they're almost like your own principles, and we make friends in that way in life. And I think within organisations, we can do similar things. It doesn't mean you all have to think the same. I thoroughly encourage diversity. So another piece to the story is about how do we bring diversity within those. But coming back to your question. I don't think any time is too soon. You can't be too small. I certainly don't think you can be too big. I think it's really, really enjoyable to do. I think it's a really good reflection on a business. And I think whilst you do it, you can really begin to tease out some opportunities to think, okay, are we being honest about this? Are they really here? Because I think there are some businesses that might have them. But you've got to live them. So, you know, whilst I talk about them in the essence of what they are, we have core values displayed throughout the business. We have a quarterly award for core values to make sure that we recognise our colleagues, and we can all vote for colleagues every quarter who then get a call out and a small award for demonstrating and helping us really live those. So, my recommendation would be, don't wait, look in the mirror, get others to come and look in that mirror too. And once you get them, they're also a really good center of gravity or point of pride, because we can talk about them, and then we can identify them, and then we can very easily identify who we are, what we are, and how we are. And that's really important for us as individuals, but also as a collective too.
And a question, Paul, did everybody buy into them? Have there been any casualties along the way?
I suppose the answer to that is we did quite when we pulled them together, we did a lot of reflection amongst teams, and one of our first passes was really just pretty much I spent time with everyone within the organisation in the very early days. What I wanted to try and do is observe some of those key behaviours and then present them back. Because it's very difficult to start from a blank page and say, what do you think yours are at start of a 10? And give me 4, because most people find that a bit tricky. But actually, as you look over time and you look across teams, you begin to see similarities. You begin to see things that actually we all sort of lean towards. So, yeah, it was a really interesting time for us in terms of managing to tease out those. So was there any casualties? Over time, I think there are, yes. And I think it's okay for both us and individuals within the organisation to say, that's not how I feel or not how I am, and that's okay. And I think that's part of positive management of any business. We certainly didn't have anyone say, oh, these are terrible, get them out, they're just so wrong. But we do talk about enabling behaviours within the business, which are things that are really aligned, and we also talk about derailing behaviours. So they're both really important, and all of us sometimes can slightly come off the rails and think about that. And if we are trusting as a team and we really collaborate, then actually we get the opportunity to say, actually, there's a bit outside. So yeah, that's kind of how it works for us.
And you talk about the pace. You mentioned earlier about getting the pace in the organisation. When you came in 2 years ago, where was the pace then versus where it is today? And I guess what part does getting the cadence and the pace and the rhythm right in the business, particularly when you're managing a growth business and you're trying to drive, a really fast growth journey like you are? So I'm really intrigued in your thoughts about that whole pace and cadence.
It's really important. 15 seconds every order. I like to think of Amazon as part of what might be a pace setter on the track. And Royston, you and I have spoken many times about day one businesses, and Jeff Bezos and Amazon. They make $4,722 a second, which is $283,000 a minute. And 17 million an hour. So that's kind of the pace. And they are just, I respect them for so many reasons. So, Jeff's view was he wanted to build an absolute ecosystem, and he's done nothing but that. He's created the most trusted brand on the planet, and consumers love marketplaces now. That's really evident. So when we think about pace, we have to think about that. Because that's our standard, that's our bar, that's our operating level. So we kind of have two hats. So we're very lucky as a team to be here in Jersey, but we're also very lucky to walk into the office and then realise that actually we're in 21 global platforms across the whole of the planet, that's our pace, and that's our wake up call every day, We also know, many of us, I'm sure, that the rate of e-commerce change is, if you look at the rate of pace and change, it's about 4 years worth of growth in the last year. So, you know, those are our indicators. And for me, the key there for us as a business is to recognize that that is the place, make sure that we are setting ourselves to those standards and making sure that we've got the rhythm and the cadence of how we operate, you know, by day, by second, by week, and how we have in this business absolute habitual routines that have that pace and rhythm set for us. Some of it is set by us, and then some of it, of course, is the market conditions. And so we're always mindful of that. Really important. But I think every business has got them. You know, I've worked with other businesses outside of this. And, you know, you'll find that some of the big successful businesses that I've been lucky enough to work with, they've all got that rhythm and cadence and pace. And when you ask, they can set it for you and say, this is what we do. Go and look at Apple. They you know, have two key releases every year around operating software and then hardware. And they live and die by that. And they work all the time around that, you know. So there's great examples of that, but that's our pace.
You've used a really interesting word there when you said habitual routines. And I work with so many clients who spend so much time planning and trying to get the plan right, but what they do is they forget to execute. And likewise, you can spend so much time doing that you're not doing the planning. So we'll come back to the planning bit in a moment, but when you talk about these habitual routines, getting within your pace and cadence, the kind of the disciplined execution, how do you get that where you don't just have the plan, but you people are flawless, obsessive, relentless, disciplined in execution? How do you get that embedded within your performance culture?
Yeah, for us, we start with talking about high-performing teams. And one of the things that really fuels it, in my mind, within our core value constructs, if we come back to base, one of those key drivers is Kaizen. So Kaizen is a philosophy about continuous improvement. That means, for us, that means in ourselves and also as a business. And it starts with us, then it goes into the business. And so we have, you know, a culture of continuous improvement, which really helps. Because, of course, whatever you did on day one, you're going to change on day two and then day three. And incrementally, we change every day. And so, you know, that's part of our overall philosophy in terms of Kaizen. It means, in Japanese, it means change good. And we really like it. So that's certainly part of our overall driving philosophy. How that really comes to life is, you know, in some ways our business, we're lucky. We have to ship certain products every day without fail to consumers all over the world. It needs to reach them without fail. And if they have a complaint or an issue, we have to deal with that within a certain construct of time without fail. So our SLA around something like CX is we've got 24 hours in which to respond. We respond within 4 hours, and we've got a three... Using mostly people and software, we've got what I would call a 4.9s SLA, which is just, you know, almost unheard of just in software alone. So, you know, that's part of it. And then obviously we have to ship every single item every day, which is what we do. So our day one business is almost relived every day anyway, because every day we come in, it's 5,000 today, it'll be 7,000 tomorrow, it might be 8,000 the following day. And so our teams are very set in their routines to do that.
And how do you get, because within the performance culture, when you are, it's every single day the clock goes forward to zero, which is what I'm hearing. How do you get people to bring that the A game every single day? Because it's the pace of your business is just relentless. And it's almost you can't come in and have do you know what, I think I'm going to be a bit lethargic today, or I'm just going to, you know what, I'm not going to be on my A game. I'm going to bring a D game today. You need everybody to bring an A game every single day, because that's the rhythm of the business. How do you get people to come in every single day with that relentless focus and commitment to want to do it?
My view on that is kind of two parts, really. One is that we're very data-centered as a business. And so we're very lucky because, of course, we're really tech and retail all in one. Under one umbrella. So it means that at our disposal, we have an awful lot of data that we can share right across the business. So, you know, we have a speedometer for everyone one way or another in the business. So you can look down every day and understand what speed are you traveling at and what are you achieving? You know, and so that's been within the DNA of this business. And we call them measurements that matter. But that's been within the DNA of the business since the very beginning, and it's never changed. It's only evolved over time. So we get, you know, closer to that day in, day out for as many people in the business as we possibly can. Because it's just exciting, you know. You begin to know, you know, I'm making a difference. It doesn't matter where you are in our business. Everybody is pulling on the rope. And actually, we begin, all of us, to understand what difference we make by virtue of having those dashboards and having that data that begins to say, hey, listen, this is really good. And of course, it's always exciting being in business growing at the speed at which we're operating, because the team get to see, okay, what I did yesterday generated those results. What I do tomorrow might generate even better. And so we're that way inclined to grow, challenge ourselves and, you know, and the markets. And we've got some really smart software that also helps us win.
So what I'm hearing there is that, in essence, data allows you to keep score and to allows you to know how well people are doing and what role they play. And I know you are so data-driven, and I can see it with the nature of your business, but, you know, we've had lots of conversations about the decisive leader today leads through data, knowledge, and application. So I absolutely see it in your business, but what would you say to other business owners, leaders, entrepreneurs, business professionals listening to this episode today about the importance of leading through data generally as a kind of universal leadership principle?
I've been 31 years in business. The one differentiating factor I've always found is, you know, numbers are always there, data and insights are always there. You know, behavior can be a data set as much as numbers can be a data set. So be careful thinking because we've got numbers, we've just got lots of data. You know, I would apply data to knowing everybody's Myers-Briggs type within the leadership team. Data set, because it begins to say, what sort of diversity have we got in the organization? You know, that's another data set. So I think it's easy to say, you know, that we're an online and so we've got, and we have. But I think, you know, data can mean many things. So I think that would be my first point. I think my other point is I also think about data in two concepts, leading and lagging data. And so, you know, for me, a lot of people look at lagging data, which is an outcome. And actually, I think orientation of leadership and business is more often about what are the leading indicators, so what are the leading data indicators look like. You know, so we work really hard to think about, okay, what's in our data set, what's leading and what's lagging, because the leading ones are going to drive you the outcomes and the lagging indicators. So if we really orientate on those, which is, so what speed am I going at, and so now for how long, now I know where I'm going to get. So actually, you're probably going to know your lagging indicator, but actually you need to orientate on leading. So I guess my answer is, you know, data's everywhere, and it means lots of different things to different businesses. And my other piece of guidance would be, we certainly try to orientate as much as we can on leading indicators that then drive our lagging. We, of course, have both, like many businesses. But I think the construct in many businesses can sometimes be more orientated to lagging.
I mean, that's a really interesting concept, the lead, the lag. Can we make that real? Give us an example of lag indicators and give us an example of lead indicators as you see them in your business to make it real.
So, you know, if we want to grow our business by, let's say we want to grow our business by £1 million worth of revenue, what are the leading indicators that we're going to pull or drive to drive that outcome? It's not that complex for us. So, you know, we'll say, okay, well, we're going to need to buy X thousand product to drive that outcome. And because we have data and insight to make the right choices and the team have all of the experience that they have, actually, we have a formula for what we know to be right. So what we can say to the business is, okay, actually, if we buy another 500 products, the 500 products are going to work in this way. We'll have a variance between here and here, and actually the outcome is going to be that. So actually the lead instruction is, let's buy some more in that category, or let's buy some more in that on that line. So that's certainly one right in the wheelhouse of data that for me is something that we do from a leading and lagging point of view in terms of outcome on financials.
And I suppose as well, if you're shipping 5,000 products, a lag indicator might be at the end of the day, at 5 o'clock or whatever, wherever you put the marker in terms of what that time cycle is with 5,000, how many have we done at the end of the day cycle? But I would imagine you're not just measuring at the end of the day, are you? You've got lead indicators all throughout the day. So what frequency are you measuring where you're at against that 5,000 ticker?
Yeah, so we have daily indicators in terms of performance indicators. So the speed at which we pick, the speed at which we pack, will give us an idea of driving that daily outcome. What it also drives for us, of course, is we'll get an idea of what our cost per order is within the business. And so one of our key challenges is how do we help all of our great team in dispatch become better? So what obstacles do we need to help them with to help them to be more effective and more efficient? So in the high performance team and in our Kaizen approach, it's okay, what do we need to do to enable that? So within that part of the business, we can begin to say, okay, as a lead indicator, we're actually gonna need to put more team on this because we might be behind. So we can make that call within the business, or equally, we'll say, actually, we're having a great day. Actually, the team are gonna be done by 2 o'clock.
So you are really analysing performance in terms of how you're setting the team up for success, almost using the metaphor analogy. It's like it's the equivalent of Formula One, isn't it? When the car comes into the pit lane, that you've got X amount of time to change it. Everybody knows what part they play. Everybody knows what time they need to do it in. They've got their own data. They know what world class looks like. And that's kind of what you're saying, is how do you translate that from a sports analogy into the business arena? And what I'm hearing is that's how you've got your business set up.
I'd like to think so. You know, again, part of our core values are Kaizen, and you know, it's an ongoing thing. It never stopped, and there are always ways in which we can continue to develop that. As in the analogy, you know, the F1 teams change pretty much something every year, and we continue to do the same. And we find it part of our positive culture. It means that, you know, we can celebrate success. You know, we can really reward our Kaizen approach, and we can see the delivery of that. And that's great, because then you can really join all of that up and really bring it to life. And actually, that's why it continues to cycle, and it continues to just have that wonderful flywheel effect for us as a business. And it's exciting to do.
So let me take you back. So we've talked about the kind of the execution side. There was part of the jigsaw that I left lying on the table earlier, which was about the business planning. And in my experience, so many business owners, leaders, they're so busy in the business doing it that they never get their head up. And, you know, we talk about the balcony time and get to the balcony. How have you really shaped the plan that then allows you to then execute flawlessly against the plan? So where would you put in terms of the weighting of importance on really making sure that you are doing the critical thinking and getting your business planning and the plan right?
So we've been lucky enough to work together. So we've done a lot of work in the business around, you know, our plan, our strategy. It's absolutely critically important, not only for, you know, the business, the leadership, but it's so critically important for every one of us to know what that journey looks like. And so I like to think of it as we're all on a bus going off to the horizon. We know that. But actually, part of that journey is making sure that we bus stop it along the way, get off, have a look, see where we're at, get back on and keep going. So it's critically important for us. So if you cut us through the middle, it's part of us and our DNA. It's definitely been a part of me for a long time. So from my point of view, we have a plan on a page in its simplest form. One page, one plan. Anyone can read it any point in time, and we share it with everybody in the organization on a regular basis. Every new joiner, we do a session
with a group of new joiners as they join the organisation, and everybody gets, we all talk through what that plan on a page looks like. If we blow that up a little bit more, we've also got then through our leadership programme that we've been doing together, we've been lucky enough to develop what I call a 10-piece jigsaw, which is 10 pieces to the plan that orientates around every part of the business function strategy, so that we've got a plan on a page at the very top of the Christmas tree, and then as you come down it, every single element of the business has a plan that links up to the overall goal of the business. And what we also have done is made sure that each of the team members has a objective, we call it the road, but part of their road plan for our business that we've been working on is also joined up to that plan, which we hope creates a really nice, clear line of sight, really good engagement, because everybody knows and everybody is signed up to what it is we're doing. And we can all celebrate our part in that, because that's really important for us.
So through the business planning, through how you set the team up with data, and through the flawless execution, it's kind of like the NASA space station analogy, isn't it? That every single person comes into work every single day knowing what the ultimate North Star is and the plan to get there, and they clearly know what part they play in it. So if I came into Onigo and I went across and asked anybody for that clarity, would they all have that clarity today, do you think? That's putting you on the spot, isn't it? It's a $1 million question.
It is, and it's fine. Of course, I'd love to think so. I think what you would get is you'd get the easterly direction of the business for everyone in the organization. And I don't think you'd get a westerly answer. I think directionally, I think everybody would understand direction. And then, of course, it's very dependent on where are you in the business, and what level of appetite have you got to recount the whole plan on a page. But I think it's very important, and it's okay. You know, it's okay. You know, I don't feel like I should be able to say 100% of all of the 80 of the team would categorically roll the whole plan on the page. I'd be amazed if they did. You know, and the truth is, sometimes, you know, the direction is okay. You know, we know when we get in the car where we're going, and it's okay. You know, if I said which is next left, what road is it, and which is the next right, sometimes that's hard for people. So I think it's okay to know that not everybody knows every detail. But I would certainly want to answer that by saying every time everybody hears it, I think it helps us realign. So communication is not a one-time only thing. It's about repeating it, keeping it going as part of that rhythm, part of that cadence. And it's my job, our job, to just keep talking about that, just to help remind, reframe sometimes, or refresh. That would probably be my answer. So the answer is probably no, not everybody knows it, but directionally, I think everybody would.
And you hit on another one there in terms of communication and the role that plays in the business. And I know over the last 12 months, you and the team have done a phenomenal job. And it's kind of like people talk about repetition of messaging. If you say it once, have people got it? Are you relentless in driving the same messages over and over again? And you know, what's the critical importance of that?
I think communication is a two-way street. But I think it's incumbent on us all to just make sure we help one another with it. And so throughout the business, we've got reminders that play out all over the business. So it isn't one-time shot, and it's not a one-person responsibility either. Communication is really frequent. Again, we've got a rhythm and cadence about how we do that. And it's about consistency. So people know there'll be a town hall very soon. You know, people know there'll be a monthly update. People know there is a weekly update. And so there are certain things that just consistently occur through the business. And, you know, even for those people that have heard the plan on the page numerous times, that, you know, that I hope, you know, we just refresh it and we just take that moment. There's nothing bad about that. And I think a lot of people can just forget that communication is part of the leadership piece, and you've got to put enough time in the diary to commit to it, and you've got to believe
it. You use an interesting word there about consistency. You kind of reeled off a number of just so weekly communication, monthly communication, town halls. So do you have kind of half a dozen key yardsticks that you are just relentless with from a communication perspective? So that creates the certainty from a comms perspective in the business.
Yeah, we do. Our next step, you know, because it's hard to reach everyone in the way that everybody wants to be reached and wants to consume. It's tricky. I think we've got to be mindful of that. And so there are some things that we're doing now to think about, how does everybody want to receive it? You know, I'm of a certain age that believes that these kind of channels are right. But what I also acknowledge is that I've got children. They don't think the same channels are right for them than it is for me. So we're working really hard to see, okay, what else can we do, and what else can we communicate? What other style can we use in terms of communication to make sure everybody feels comfortable and everybody's reached? Because it's not, you know, it's not simple nowadays. Actually, communication has actually become more complex, and we have to be mindful of a lot of channel shifts and lots of behaviors are different. So yeah, that's really important to us.
So just as we come to the end, so we've talked about people, we've talked about the importance of values, systems, processes, people and performance, data, business planning, execution, so much great stuff. I just want to take you on a different pathway because, and I'm going to be quite provocative here because I know that you sit as chair of the chamber here in Jersey,
mm-hmm.
and you are massively disrupting retail in terms of the online and marketplaces and so forth. But what would your message be for the high street? Does the high street still have a place within the broader way that we're going to shop moving forward? What would be your messages to people who might not be in online retail but are more traditional in terms of their relevance and what they need to do to be maintain relevance and get their relevance within the world of technology? Big question.
I'll try and give you a short answer, Royston. So I'm really pleased to be chair of the Retail Supply Chain Committee of Chamber here in Jersey. And I do that because I've had involvement in retail supply chain for most of my career. And so, of course, I sit now with a hat, which is a disruptor in terms of online. I tend to think of it in this way. You know, consumer choice and retail has always been changing. All the time I've been working in my working career, and it will continue to do so. Retail, both physical and online, it's not one or the other. It's all retail. And so the good news is that retail physical always has a place. People want to touch things. People want to sample things. People want to engage with. And so the differentiator for physical retail is all around that. You know, can I touch it? Can I smell it? Can I feel it? And can I interact? Very difficult to do online. So I think online can sometimes fill a different gap and a different purpose. And like all businesses, as we continue to go through rapid change, we need to think about what are those glass ceilings look like and how do we need to orientate. So one of the challenges for retail is just understanding the pace, I guess. We spoke about pace. The pace of change is just phenomenal, and it's exciting. And it's understanding where that's leading to, and it's understanding where the place remains. So, you know, physical retail, we all do it. We all love it. It's a pastime, and it's part of social engagement, and it won't go.
Yeah.
But it's just, for me, the key is it's not a battleground between online and retail. Physical, it's actually how do the two things complement one another? And there are some great examples of organizations globally that really do that well. Go and look at someone like Apple. You know, they've got showrooms where you can go and touch a product. And then they're very happy for you to buy online.
but they're also very happy for you to come in and spend 30 minutes. You don't even buy anything, but you're immersed in the brand. You get a great service. And then what you've got is you've got a culture around that retail establishment. And there are great examples of that all over the world. The other one I would also say when we think of disruption, Amazon came from online. It opened its first sort of retail outlet in Seattle, where you can just go in and take the product. It's now open too in West London. They also bought Whole Foods before that. So, you know, there is certainly value in the high street. Amazon is coming into the high street. They are doing some more disruption because they want to serve the consumer in a different way. Exciting times. And so undoubtedly there is a place. But like all of us in retail, we've got to just keep the pace and understand what it is that's really going to serve the consumer, not of just today, but in the future, tomorrow, and a lot further down the line. And that's exciting. Trying to understand that and anticipate that's exciting. It's not easy, but it is.
But what I take away from what you just said there is that traditional retail has its place, but it needs to be faster about how it embraces and drives change, or it will be left behind. Or an Amazon will come in from its online with its culture of pace and rhythm, and it will take market share in the traditional retail space from retailers who have the same opportunity and in some ways are probably ahead of Amazon in terms of the traditional bricks and mortar. But are they ahead in terms of their thinking and their mindset and their agility to be able to drive that pace and sense of urgency? So urgency is probably the key word that traditional retail need to get ahead of.
And I don't think that's a new tune for retail.
No.
It's one that's always been there. It's an eternal challenge, and many great examples of it. I'm sure that from a Jersey point of view, there's a lot of retailers going through lots of change.
But there's a challenge, isn't there, Paul? It's almost knowing and not doing is as bad as not knowing.
Yeah.
So it's about how you absolutely have the bias for action. People know this intuitively, but the speed that we're moving in the world, whether you're in online or whether you're in traditional, you have to be pacey today. And when the sun comes up in the morning, it's got to be, I always share the story of the lion or the gazelle, and you've got to be running, you've got to be one step ahead of it. And at the moment, I think there's too many business leaders who are perhaps one step behind as opposed to being on the front foot, they're on the back foot.
I would totally agree. And, the other thing that consumers now can do is they can very, very easily see which you are.
Yeah.
There's no hiding places. You and I can talk about it from a business point of view, but I think the greatest challenge actually is not you and I saying it, but actually the consumer knows. They know.
Yeah.
We're all consumers. We all know whether we've just walked into a lion or a gazelle. It's really easy to feel. And I think that's the point of acceptance that every retailer needs to get to. It's like, okay, which am I really? And if you don't know, ask the consumer, because they definitely tell you.
Yeah, great point. I have one final question just as we come to the end, because I'm conscious of your time. If there were a couple of leadership principles that you would say, in order to be that purposeful, visionary, inspirational leader, if you were thinking about the top two or three traits that, in order to summarize what we've talked about today, that you say are really important in your leadership DNA, what would you draw out as being those distinctions?
So for me personally, my leadership is I think of myself as an enabler. So my job is to enable. I have the luxury of experience, and sometimes that gives me the luxury of seeing a bit further. So my job in leadership is to enable everyone in the organization to put another foot forward, continue to develop Kaizen. I do that for the business. I do that for the business units and the groups. And it's my, it's my honor and privilege to do. And so from my point of view, it's about, I think when you're given a leadership role, it's to understand that you were given it because people trust you. They have faith in what it is you see. And my return in that is to try and enable, so I think framing and remembering that as a leader, I think is really important, and every day remembering it. I think we've seen examples that maybe that's not true.
But I think that's really important. And if you've got that, I think that really helps the business and the outcomes.
What a great way to end. Leadership is all about enabling success and enabling others to be the best that they can be and bring their A game every single day. And in the process of that, you will be a successful business, just like On-A-Go is on the move. You too can be on the move in your business as well. Paul, thank you so much for your time. There's some great insights that you've shared. I'm sure I was feverishly making some notes just to capture your golden nuggets. I'm sure our listeners are. So thank you for coming on Talking Pathways today. And I wish you and On-A-Go continued success in the future. And if you like the podcast series today, make sure that you share it with your friends and make sure you like it so that you don't miss any of the episodes, because we're going to keep bringing you inspirational guests who've got great insights to share. And if you go away from Talking Pathways with just one or two golden nuggets that help you to be better in your leadership, in your personal life, and in growing your business, then that's going to be a great investment of 45 minutes. So from Paul and I and the Talking Pathways team, bye for now.
Thank you. Thanks.